So we'll dedicate the shiur for the refuah of Avram ben Alma and
Tova
bat
Bela Bracha.
And another one?
Sure.
Zvi ben Chaya.
Zvi ben Chaya. And?
John Chaya Batzara.
Sure. Avram.
Ava.
Michal.
Blima.
Bat Esther Rezo. Okay, anyone else you want to dedicate?
And also Zibur, Shani Bat
Shani Bat Henya? Henya Yehudit. Bezad Hashem, if today each one of you will add one more thing to their lists, so the Zchud will be for the Refuah, whoever we mentioned, and for the Zivug, whoever we mentioned, and whoever needs Refuah that we didn't mention, or Parnasa, Yeshua. Bezad Hashem, with our little acts that we do, we encourage and we get people to do more mitzvot, then we increase more good things to Klal Yisrael. And Bezad Hashem, that with our little mitzvot, we nezakeh everybody that we mentioned. So, good morning, and thank you for having me. It was a pleasure last time, and Bezad Hashem, we're going to start doing, I guess, once a month. We'll do a meeting. And each time we'll talk about a different topic. Since we're on very close to Pesach, so I think what we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about how we're getting ready for Pesach, what's the whole point of Pesach, a little bit of a connection between Purim and Pesach, but mainly how we can prepare ourselves for Pesach. Now we know that we have three major festivals. We have Sukkot, we have Pesach, and we have Shavuot.
Hello.
There's a big machloket in the Gemara, when was the world was created? And one opinion, Rabbi Eliezer, says that the world was created in Tishrei, like we think it is. We know the world was physically created in Elul, at the end of Elul, because Rosh Hashanah is the Friday. But the Machloket in the Gemara says that one opinion, Rabbi Eliezer says that the world was created in Tishrei, and Rabbi Yeshua says that the world was created in Nisan. The truth is that there's no, even though there's an argument, there's a Machloket, but both opinions are right. Because the world was physically created in Tishrei, but the world got its neshama, the spiritual part, the ruchnius part of the world, was given in Nisan. So both opinions are correct. Now, every holiday that we have, that we celebrate, we don't only celebrate something that happened. Bechlal, we know that in our Torah, we have three groups of mitzvot. The first group of mitzvot is called Edut. And this is a testimony. Edut is a testimony. Testimony is that something happened. So Shabbat is a Edut. It's a testimony that the world was created. And Pesach is a testimony that we left Egypt, and Purim, and Chanukah. It's all sorts of things that happened, that it's a testimony that something happened in the past. Then there's another mitzvah that is called Mishpatim, which is all the basic things that even if the Torah wouldn't tell you, you would still do it. Not to kill, not to commit adultery, not to steal. You don't need the Torah to tell you not to kill. And any normal human being will just not kill. And then there's the mitzvahs that are called chukim, that are beyond our understanding. Things like red heifer, kosher, mikveh, all sorts of things that, you know, purity and impurity, things that don't make sense. So Pesach, A, it's a mitzvah of testimony, because it's a testimony that the Jews left Mitzrayim, but it's also a mitzvah of chukim, something that is beyond our understanding. And from all three of the festivals, Pesach has the most powerful koach that one should tap into. And what we're going to try to cover today in a very short version is, first of all, what happens on Pesach. More than that, how do I prepare to that so I can actually derive what happens on Pesach? And mainly what I have to apply to my own life, so I can actually make a change in my own life and a change to my surrounding. Because anything that we learn, if we don't actually apply it, then, you know, besides of having the mitzvah of learning, I didn't do nothing. Our sages say, "Hamaseh hu haikar." The action is the main part.
Especially with women who are not even, they don't even have the mitzvah.
Exactly, they don't have a chiyuv, but they still can learn. Exactly. But the thing is that even women, they have to learn. They have to learn things, they have to know how to live their life. They need to learn things about kosher, and they need to learn about Shabbat, and family purity, and modesty. Women also have to learn. But the point is that if I learn and I don't apply it to my day-to-day life, then besides of getting the mitzvah of learning, and besides that I got connected to the Master of the Universe who actually gave us this wisdom, but the bottom line is that I have to bring it down to action. That's the bottom line. So we're going to try to cover these three topics, and at the end, how am I bringing it to the bottom line, how we say here in Israel, tachles, what am I doing? So first of all, we see a very great connection between Purim and Pesach. Everything that's happened in our calendar didn't happen by chance. We see that the order of the year, it happens in a certain sequence. And every year it repeats itself. We call the holidays in Hebrew Chagim. Not only because it's a Chag, because we celebrate, rather because it returns every year. It comes from the word Lachug. We know that clocks... I don't know even how you say it in English, but the sticks are called mechugim, the ones that turn around. Something that turns around constantly, it comes back to the same place, is called machog. So chagim comes from the word that they repeat themselves every year. And we see that the cycle, there's an order. So even though some events in history added holidays, like Purim and Hanukkah, but even that happened b'ashgacha pratit. Nothing happens because it has no reason. So we always see a great connection from one holiday to the other. And there's a very good, great connection between Purim and Pesach, because Purim was the beginning of the preparation for Pesach. And even though we celebrated Purim last week and it's not so applicable, but the whole point of Purim, that the main feature, the main hero, I can say a hero, the main actor in the script is Haman. And Haman is a direct descendant of Amalek. Amalek is also known as a klipa. And the whole point of Haman was to annul, to overpower all the power of Mordechai. Mordechai was the ultimate bitul, the ultimate nullification. And the higher a person wants to reach, that person has to be more and more annulled. If a person wants to get more godly revelation, or a person wants to reach to a much higher level, a person has to annul himself. Annul himself, making himself more humble and more small. And we'll see at the end how it's connected, at the end of the class, how it's connected to Pesach. But Haman, his whole point was to totally overpower Mordechai, who was at the time, he was the tzaddik of the generation. We know that in every generation we have a Mordechai and we have a Esther. But in every generation we also have a Haman. Now Haman can come in a physical body, it can manifest into a body, to a point that we saw that 70 years ago we had a Haman, Yimach Shemo Hitler, that wanted to completely destroy us. And we see that this Haman keeps coming over and over. Each time it comes in a different form. But in every generation, if it doesn't come in a form of a human being, it still comes in a form of a klipa. A klipa means a spiritual energy that opposes holiness. The original was Amalek, that Amalek wanted to destroy us. The second that we left Mitzrayim, Amalek came out to fight with us. And we see in many occasions in the history, Amalek came back to destroy us. So sometimes it manifests into a human being. We actually see in our generation that there is a Haman in Persia that says out in the open that he wants to destroy us. So even though in not all the generations they actually can bring it down to action, well, we sing it in the Haganah that every generation, Bechol Dor, Omdim Aleinu Lechaloteinu, every generation, somebody comes and wants to destroy us. So in every generation we meet the character of the script, his name is Haman. Amazingly, when we read in the Haggadah, I mean in the Megillah, We have a very funny custom that every time that we mention his name, we make noise. But if you notice, we only make noise when we mention his name with a word after that. When we just say Haman, we don't do nothing. When we say Haman Ha'agagi, that's when we make noise. And at the end, we're going to connect also the Agagi, how all this connected. Because one of the topics that I want to touch, besides how we prepare for Pesach, is how we're connecting that to the redemption and how we're preparing ourselves for the redemption that is around the corner. So one of the connections of Purim and Pesach is that Haman came to destroy us physically, but in every generation, this Haman comes to destroy us spiritually. And the Klipa of Haman, which is called also Klipat Amalek, we know the Klipat Amalek, each Klipa, for the ones who don't know what I'm talking about, Klipa is a negative energy that opposes holiness. And there's many different types of Klipot. Each Klipa will manifest to a different thing. I like calling the Klipa a spiritual infection, because the same way that a physical infection attacks an organ in the body, and then it multiplies, and you have to kill the infection from the root, you can kill the infection from the surface. The problem in our generation, that medicine, they're not going to the root, they're covering the surface. So a person will have an infection. Instead of going to the root and killing the root, they cover it from an external part with a cream, with a pill, with all sorts of things that don't work. That's why we see medicine in our generation doesn't really work, because if it would have worked, then there wouldn't be sick people. So the same way there's a spiritual infection, that it attacks a certain organ. And each klipa will attack a certain physical and spiritual organ. And the klipa of Amalek attacks the neck, what's called oref. This klipa, what it does, it catches us by the oref, by the back of our neck. Now we see that physically, we have the head, and then we have the body, and there's some type of a little pipe that connects the head and the body. In the spiritual term, everything that we have in the physical, it's a manifestation from the spiritual worlds. And the same way that we have a physical body and the body has a shape, it's because in the spiritual worlds, the spiritual human being, so to say, has a shape exactly what we have. So it manifests into this world that we have a shape of a head and a neck and a body and hands. It says in Patach Eliyahu, in the beginning of the Zohar, how the Sefirot are in the shape of our body. That there's two arms, there's a body, there's a head, there's two legs. So the head corresponds to the level of what's called mochin. We have 10 sefirot. The first three are intellect, chokhmah, bina, and dat. And then the seven ones are midot, are attributes. And there's a connection between the mochin and the midot. And this connection is this what's called tzavar. Anything that has to go from here to here has to go through the tzavar. So this klipa of Amalek, what it does a separation between the mochin, between the intellect, and to my attributes. And this is the main effect of this klipa, to separate what I know, understand, and intellectually I understand, but to stop it from coming into action, to coming into my body. So I can understand something. I can understand that according to the Torah, it's prohibited for me to desecrate Shabbat, or to eat pork, or to steal. But to actually bring it down into action, that's a completely different thing. There are many people that they understand that according to the Torah, you are prohibited to do something, but to actually bring it to action, that's a total different thing. Why? Because this Amalek, it stops from the mochin to the midot, and he says, whatever you understand, leave it in your head. Don't bring it down into your body. And it's not only in Kedusha, it's not only in serving Hashem, we can see it also in the physical world. That I'll give you an example. A person, any human being that smokes, they know that smoking is bad for your health. Everybody in our generation already knows that smoking is bad. So people understand in their mind that smoking is bad, but they still smoke. Why? Because the intellect is not connected to the body. There's a separation. So this klipa doesn't only affect us in the spiritual level, it also affects us in the physical level. That we're separating from what we understand to what we actually do. And our job is to actually connect the mochin, the intellect, into my midot, so I can actually apply it. So this klipa of Amalek, it attacks the oref, the tzavar, the neck, and it brings in this doubt, and it brings in whatever I understand stays in my mind, it doesn't go into actual action. And this is the klipa of Aman, that he wanted to separate. That's why it says the Megillah starts, Yeshno Am Echad, there's one nation, Mefuzar u'Meforad. Mefuzar u'Meforad means that it's scattered all over the world, and it's also Meforad, there's a separation, they're not united. Now this is in the physical level, but also in the spiritual level, Mefuzar u'Meforad, there's no connection from the intellect to the body. And this is the whole concept of Haman. Haman came to cause this separation, and to cause this separation not only from each other, but rather from us to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the connection to Pesach, we're going to close the circle towards the end. But the fact that it didn't come into action gives us the power to start preparing for Pesach. Now, what really happened on Pesach? Besides that, I mentioned before that in the history, in the testimony that we're celebrating that we left Egypt, what really happened? The Jews were slaves in Mitzrayim. Then came Moshe Rabbeinu, did some hocus pocus and got them out. This is the story in general. In real life, what happened is that in order for the Jews to get the Gilui Elokut that they got in Ma'amad Har Sinai, the godly revelation of getting the Torah, they had to go through 210 years of shiabud, of slavery. If not, they wouldn't be able to get the Torah. We learn from that in order for us to ascend to a higher level, or to get a godly revelation, or to be promoted, so to say, in the spiritual level, I have to go through some type of yisurim in this world, some type of hardship. Because this is what cleans me in order to be ready to go to a much higher level. And we see that...
All suffering, sorry to interrupt you.
Excuse me?
Does that relate to all suffering?
All suffering. I don't like saying the word suffering. The word that we use in Hebrew is yisurim. Yisurim is suffering. But it doesn't sound so nice to the ear, suffering, so I rather say hardship. But the truth is that we all go through hardship. In every generation, we go through hardship. There's many reasons why we go through this hardship, this yisurim. Some of the times, we just bring it on ourselves. A lot of people think that God punishes us. The reality is God doesn't punish anyone. God is the ultimate good. He doesn't have anything negative in Him to be able to bring it down to this world that it will be a punishment. God sometimes just stands on the sides, and I do a certain action, and my action will bring on me a reaction. And people say, oh, God is punishing me. Nachon, chutz mirat shamayim. When it says, I don't want to get into that, I don't want to sidetrack.
It doesn't.
What are we going to do? I'll tell you what we're going to do. I don't want to sidetrack from our topic. At the end, we're going to give a lot of time for questions and answers. If you have a question and you want to connect it to something we said, write it down and I'll fill in the gaps. But I'm already sidetracking with the whole Yisurim part. I just want to make a point that a lot of people think that Hashem is standing in Shamayim with a notebook and says, oh, she did this! Send the angels to beat her up. It doesn't work like that. The point is that a lot of the Yisurim that we get is we actually do a certain action and I bring myself a reaction. If I'm going to take like a stone and I'm going to throw now at this big window and the window will explode into pieces, is it the window's fault? Is it the stone's fault? Can I be upset at anyone here? No, I did a certain action. Now I have to deal with the reaction. I have to pay for the window. I have to clean the mess. So in this world, a lot of the times, we get a reaction. So it's not a punishment. It's not a, you know, it's not, a lot of people just misinterpret it. Like you said, a kol bidei shamayim. Yeah, a kol bidei shamayim. The point is that I don't want to sidetrack too much on that, but a lot of the yisurim that we get is our own responsibility. A lot of the yisurim that we get, we actually brought baggage from a different reincarnation. But a lot of the yisurim, this hardship that we go through, is actually part of the script of our life. Our life is a script. Each and every one of us has a movie of our life. Hashem is the producer, I'm the star. And there's a script, and I go on the script. And Hashem planted on the ways all sorts of speed bumps. and I have to go on the road. And these speed bumps are all sorts of things that happen to me in my life. Now when something happens to me, right away I'm trying to see who's to blame. First of all, I'm looking who to blame. This is the first problem. The reality is it's sometimes it's not about blaming. Sometimes it's just understanding that I'm going on a speed bump right now. Now there's a big concept in our belief that is called Bchira Chofshit. Bchira Chofshit means free will. And a lot of people don't understand the concept of free will. Because if Hashem knows everything, how can there be free will? Free will is not if I'm going to wake up in the morning, if I'm going to decide to wear a blue shirt or a white shirt. That's not free will. Even that Hashem knows what I'm going to do. But this is not the free will. Free will means that Hashem is going to put through this script all sorts of speed bumps. And Hashem is going to put an opportunity in front of me, and now He wants to see what I'm going to do. So He's going to put a mitzvah in front of me. Now He wants to see if I'm going to choose to do the mitzvah or choose not to do the mitzvah. I can go down the street now and a person will approach me and tell me, I'm stuck, my car is not starting. Can you take me somewhere? Can you help me? I have an opportunity to do a mitzvah now. It's my free will if I'm going to do the mitzvah or I'm going to come up with some type of an excuse and say, I'm very busy. Same thing with the sin. Hashem will put an opportunity in my path to do a sin. Hashem wants to see. Now we'll see if He's going to choose to do it or not. This is in general what means free will. But really what free will means, Bchira Chofshit, is that I'm going on this script, on a timeline. And it's all predestined. My life is already predestined. And then I go on a speed bump. Now, the real Bchira Chofshit is if I choose to accept that this happened because of Hashem or not. This is the ultimate Bchira Chofshit. If I'm willing to accept that this hardship right now is the will of Hashem. And if I'm accepting that this is coming from Hashem, even the bad, then I passed the test. I got a check on one of the lists. In most cases we fail and we complain and we look who to blame. It's her fault, it's she's fault, I did this, maybe because of that. The Bchira Chofshit is to see if I'm willing to accept that, okay, right now I don't have parnasa, that's from Hashem. Right now I can't find my other half, it's from Hashem. Right now this is happening, it's from Hashem. This is the ultimate Kabbalat Ol, this is the ultimate Bitul, this is what we want to get to at the end of the lecture, the whole concept of Pesach. And the more I'm accepting that everything in my life comes from Hashem, the more my life is easier, because everything comes from Hashem. Now, of course, when something bad happens in my life,
the reaction, you said action and reaction.
There's a few different things. There's some of the things that happen in my life is an action and a reaction.
So we bring it upon ourselves.
Exactly. Sometimes it's predestined. Sometimes it's from a previous life. There's many things how it happens in my life. The thing is that once something happens in my life, good or bad, one needs to do an analogy, a quick analogy. Now, if it's something good, you don't have to do much of an analogy, although you want to do an analogy, because if something good happens, says, you know, maybe I did this amazing mitzvah, and that's the reaction that I'm getting. Shlomo HaMelech says, Kamayim apanim el apanim. What does it mean? That a person looks in a mirror, there's going to be a reflection. Now, if I smile at the person in the mirror will smile back at me. Now, if I frown at the person in the mirror, the person in the mirror will frown back at me. This is Kamayim apanim el apanim. That I do a certain action and I'm going to bring on myself a reaction. So anything that happens in my life, don't be OCD on it, but you have to make a quick analogy. Maybe I did a very good action and right now I got a very nice reaction. And we see that there are a lot of mitzvahs that we actually get a reward in this world. Person does charity, right away he will get a reaction in this world. A keren la'olam haba, but you actually get some of the sachar in this world. You know, honoring parents, achnasat kala. There's many mitzvot, we read it every morning, that I do and I actually get some of the reward in this world. So I do want to make an analogy because maybe I did something good and I brought something good on me, I want to do it again.
But you can also get to kochi v'otzem yadi.
That's why you have to do
the mitzvah.
Exactly. So you have to do it.
Tzaddik.
You have to do it with a lot of bitul, a lot of kabbalat ol. Every analogy that you do, for the good or for the bad, you first of all have to understand that even when I did a mitzvah, it's because Hashem allowed me to do the mitzvah. If I want to do a mitzvah, it's only because Hashem allowed me to do the mitzvah. Which means that even when I do a mitzvah, I have to thank Hashem for giving me the opportunity to do the mitzvah. Because you have to have a zchut to do a mitzvah. People wake up in the morning and they think it's, you know, bederech mimele, that going and praying every day, that, oh, it's like you said, kochi v'otzei medi, I did it. No, Hashem allowed you to have koach to wake up in the morning. So every mitzvah that I do, I have to thank Hashem for giving me the opportunity to bechal to do the mitzvah. Because a lot of people are chas v'shalom in a very low level, and they don't even have the zchut to do the mitzvah. How many times people will want to do the mitzvah and there's going to have so many afraot, so many ikuvim, so many stumbles to stop the person from doing the mitzvah. So even to do a mitzvah, you need a zchut. But since we're starting to really drift away from our topic, the point is to sum this point up, is that everything that happens in my life happens as a reason for that. One needs to do a very quick analogy. Has to do it with a lot of yirat shamayim, that not to have any ego of saying, I did it. But the point is that everything that happens to me, I have to do quickly a cheshbon nefesh. That's why our sages tiknu that we say kriyat shma lamita every day. Because there are certain times in the year that we do tshuvan, when we do cheshbon nefesh. The main one is Yom Kippurim. This is the day of atonement. But the reality is that you can't do tshuva once a year. Because how can you remember on Yom Kippur what you did 11 months before that? So it's not the right time to do tshuva. So Hashem says, okay, every Rosh Chodesh you're going to do tshuva. It's an auspicious time. Erev Rosh Chodesh is called the Yom Kippur Katan. It's such a powerful time that the minhag of the Ashkenazim is actually to fast Erev Rosh Chodesh, because it's mamash a Yom Kippur Katan. You can do tshuva for the entire month. It's such a huge mitzvah that we're going to talk about it in a second, how when the Jews, before they left Mitzrayim, they got two mitzvot. One of them was Korban Pesach, and one of them is Rosh Chodesh. So Rosh Chodesh is a very powerful time. Rosh Chodesh is the festival of women. I'm not going to get into that because that's a whole different thing. But if you want, on my website, there's a lecture that I talk about the power of Rosh Chodesh connected to Tehilim, David HaMelech, and women. It's one circle, the power of Rosh Chodesh. I have cards over there, you can take them. And actually, I think I have CDs here, and in one of the CDs, I think, is that lecture. But Rosh Chodesh is a very powerful and auspicious time to do tshuva for the entire Chodesh. Then we have Erev Shabbat. Erev Shabbat, we do tshuva for the entire week. 5 minutes, 10 minutes before you light your candles. The point is not to go into the 18 minutes like most people do. And they're like, okay, I have another, I'm in the 18 minutes. The point is to accept Shabbat half an hour before and to be already dressed and showered. And before you light the candles, before you tap into this unbelievable godly light that comes down in that moment, you do tshuva. You sit with yourself for 5 minutes, you tell the husband, take care of the kids for 5 minutes, you go to your room, you find a corner, and you sit and you're saying, I'm about now to enter a high realm. Shabbat is coming. I'm going into on the express train. How am I going into? Shabbat is the day of kapara. This is the day of atonement, is Shabbat. Shabbat, if a person keeps Shabbat 100%, all the bad things that they did in the week are completely forgiven. If the person did Shuvah right before Shabbat. Shabbat is a very auspicious time. So if you prepare the right way, our sages say that the preparation for the mitzvah is more important than the actual mitzvah. So if you prepare the right way, the same way that you cook for 24 hours, so move the cooking 1 hour earlier, so an hour before Shabbat, you can sit with yourself quietly, meditate. What did I do my entire week? How did I conduct this week? Was I a good mom? Was I a good wife? Was I a good boss? Was I a good servant to my master? You do cheshbon nefesh and you do tshuva erev Shabbat because you want to enter Shabbat completely clean. But beyond that, we have an auspicious time once a day to do tshuva on kriyat shma lamita. It's time to do cheshbon nefesh. It's not just saying shma yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, sitting on bed with a pyjama and a teddy bear. This is not the point of Kriyat Shema. Kriyat Shema is that you don't know if you're going to open up your eyes the next day. We say, Be'adcha afkid ruchi, I'm giving you my neshama now. Maybe I'm not coming back. So at least let me do tshuva, that if I chas v'shalom have to leave this world, then at least I left this world with tshuva. Because tshuva can erase everything. So Kriyat Shema Lamita is a very auspicious time that you end the day with tshuva. You end the day with tshuva, and you completely clear your cheshbon. So you want to make sure that you end the day with tshuva. So we have auspicious times the entire year to do tshuva. Now we're totally sidetracked, so we're going to somehow go back to where we started. I'm just going to ask you, do you mind somebody moved the camera and it got off-centered? So at least we're going to have that, at least the viewers will... Somebody once invited me to a class, and when I came there, there was three people. And she was waiting outside, white. She was like, I feel so bad, and you drove so long. And I told her, don't worry, you know, three people was more than two. And don't worry, 5,000 people watching later the video, so don't worry. So I'm very particular that the video is good. People complain online, hey, why are people asking questions? Why is this? Why is that? I'm joking. So, to kind of go back to where we started, this klipa of Amalek, this klipa that comes every generation, it comes to separate us, to separate the intellect and the midot, our attributes, and to control our mind. This is what it comes to do. This is this klipa. And at the end, again, I'm going to connect all that together. What's this whole controlling of our mind? So we see that Purim is the preparation for Pesach, because I have a whole month to start preparing for this special day. Now, what really happens on Pesach? So we said before we sidetracked, that in order for me to receive a much greater godly revelation, I have to go through some type of hardship before that. Now, we translate it as hardship, but the reality is, you can call it as polishing it up. Before you want to walk into, you go to a wedding or a banquet, you're not going to come with dirty clothes and dirty body. You're going to clean your clothes, you're going to make sure you have your haircut is good, you put makeup. You kind of get ready for something greater. So if I want to get a higher level, a godly revelation, then I have to get ready for that. But how do we know that only in the physical world there's what's called zman, time, and makom? When Hashem wanted to create the world, He had to create two things. A place, a space, what's called makom, and time, zman. Because in the spiritual world, there's no time and there's no space. So only in this world, we have something that is considered size. We have distance and heights. But in the spiritual world, there's no such a thing. In the spiritual world, there's levels. It's called madrigot. So there's no such a thing that something is higher than another thing, because there's no physical space. So this is called madrigot, levels. And in the spiritual level, I want to climb my levels, my madrigot. So in order for me to ascend to a higher level, I have to go through some type of a cleansing. Bechlal, we know that there are many levels in Gan Eden. We know that in general, there are two levels in Gan Eden. A lower level of Gan Eden and a higher level of Gan Eden. Gan Eden Tachton and Gan Eden Elyon. But in each one of these levels, there's numerous and endless amount of more levels. And each neshama is positioned in a different level. And some of the neshamot, that when they want to ascend to a high level, they have to go down to a certain river. It's called Nahar Dino. It's a river of fire. They have to dip into this river of fire in order to ascend to a high level. This is called Yerida Letzorech Aliyah. Anytime that I want to ascend to a high level, I first have to go a little bit down. That's why part of the Yisurim that we get is actually me going one step back in order to get momentum to go three steps forward. The problem is that a lot of people, when they have this regression, when they go back, they right away fall into despair. That's why Rabbi Nachman says, "En yeush ba'olam." Why are you falling into despair? Because it's part of the system. If I want to jump now over a very high fence, I have to go back 100 meters to run and get momentum in order to jump over it. So sometimes when I go back in my life, it's actually a yirida letzorech aliyah. I'm just gathering some energy and air in order for me to ascend to a much higher level. So sometimes it interprets in our life to hardship and yisurim, something that doesn't seem that it's good for me right now, but it's actually not that bad. You see, sometimes a person loses their job. For that moment, oh, tragedy, how am I going to pay my bills? What's going to be? How am I going to support my family? Yeah, but then down the line, 2-3 months down the line, they find a much better job. So a lot of the times in our life, when we go a little bit back, it's part of the process, and it's a sign that I'm going to ascend to a much higher level. So in order for the Jews at that time to receive the Torah, and you have to understand that at the time of the receiving of the Torah, they weren't just standing next to a mountain and, you know, how we can try to imagine it. You have to understand that the Shekhinah, the godly revelation, came down on the mountain. Something we don't understand in our mind, the Gilui Elokut, the godly revelation that they got then. They literally saw godly revelation. They heard God's voice. It was this unbelievable thing that we can't even understand what it means. We don't even understand what Matan Torah means. But in order to receive that, in order for them to be worthy, to stand in front of God and receive this godly revelation, they had to go through 210 years of suffering, which comes to teach us what type of godly revelation we're going to get very soon when Mashiach comes, after suffering for 2,000 years. For 210 years they suffered and they saw Gilui Elokut in Matan Torah. Imagine what we're about to see. When Mashiach is going to come, it's going to be much greater than what they saw at the time when they left Mitzrayim. So in order for them to get this godly revelation, to be ascended to a much higher level, they had to go through this Yerida. Mitzrayim is in the southern part of Israel. It says Yardu le Mitzrayim, meaning that they went down in their level in order to go to a higher level. But really what happened on that day when they left Mitzrayim, not only that they left slavery, they changed the reality. Now, it says that for all this time that the Jews were in Mitzrayim, not one slave was able to run away. Now, not that they had fences and cameras and drones and helicopters, how can one slave not run away? So first of all, we know that they had these guard dogs. You know, when they left Mitzrayim, it says, "Lo yecheratz kelev leshono," the dogs didn't bark. Now, they didn't have chihuahuas there and Dobermans there that were barking every time somebody left. If you notice in the scripts, the ancient scripts, you see this type of an animal that looked like a dog. It was standing, had these pointy ears. This was one of their idols. And these dogs, they were the guards. They were idols. They were scattered all over the Mitzrayim. And when an Eved, a slave, wanted to run away, they were like, "Hey, he's running, he's running." But more than that, they had such power of impurity. It was a klipa. Any person that came to the border, this klipa convinced that person to go back. And we see that, you know, when the Jews left Mitzrayim, they believed in Moshe. 80% of them didn't even believe. The actual story was that Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Mitzrayim, 80% of the people there didn't even want to listen to him. That's how powerful the kohot of the tumah, the powers of impurity were in that time, that 20% left Mitzrayim. Can you imagine? They left about 3 million people. 15 million people stayed behind. Now, even when they left Mitzrayim, they were only able to leave Mitzrayim because on that particular moment was a Gilui Elokut, on the day that they left, the Zayin of Nisan. And then this godly revelation disappeared. That's why we see that the entire time they're complaining. Why did you bring us out to the desert? Why did you bring us down to bury us here? And we used to have, they're talking about the Kishuim. And he took you out of slavery and you're complaining? So the power of Mitzrayim was this klipa that controlled their mind, that even when a slave would come to the border, this klipa would convince them to go back. And this is the klipa that we're fighting up until now in our generation. These habits. We have habits. And it's hard to us to leave our habits. And this is this Haman that comes and grabs us our neck. It separates our intellect from what I understand that is not good for me, but it doesn't sink, it doesn't go through my tzavar, through my neck, to my midot, so I can actually bring it into action. And that's what they fought then. This whole klipa, then they used to call this klipa kelev. Kelev means kulo lev, just heart, just teavot, just desires. And this klipa was so strong that when somebody wanted to leave Mitzrayim, it convinced him, no, you're comfortable here, go back. This is the klipa that we're fighting today. Mitzrayim is not a country. Mitzrayim comes from the word meitzar, a limitation. When they went out of Mitzrayim, they went out of their limitations. That's why our sages say, "Bechol dov v'dov חייב אדם לראות את עצמו כאילו הוא יצא ממצרים. Every generation a person has to see himself like as if he went out of מצרים. Comes the Balatan and he says בכל יום ויום, not כל דור ודור. Why? Because every day, if I went out of my limitation, I left מצרים. But then I come into a new limitation. And I can be the most religious, God-fearing person. I'm still battling my limitations. I'm battling my klipa in my mind that doesn't let me leave my comfort zone. And you know, it's funny. I used to live now 17 years in America. I was born in Israel. I grew up here in Ra'anana. And 17 years I lived in America. And every person that I met there, oh, Israel is the best. I can't wait to go back to Israel. It's the blessed place. So why are you here? Oh, you know, the business is here. I have a house here. Yeah, but if you're saying Israel is the best, why are you not here? Because people can't leave their place. This is what's called a habit. People have habits and they don't know how to break through out of their habits. And a person can be a very good person and can be a very God-fearing person and do a lot of mitzvot and learn and everything. But they have certain habits that they can't break them. They can't go out of them. And this is the limitation that we're fighting up until today. This is the klipa that started in Purim. This is this Haman that grabs us from behind. And every time that I want to go out of my habits, it cools me down. No, 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 no. Go back to where you are. You're comfortable where you are. Why grow to a higher level? Why should you ascend to a higher level? Sometimes you wake up in the morning like, you know, today I'm going to pray. I didn't pray for a whole month. Today is the day. The house is empty. I have quiet. And then the phone rings. And then an email. And then this. And then this. And before you know it, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, oh, I didn't get to pray. Hold on, you need the zchut for that. That's davar rishon. Second of all, this is this klipa that comes and tells you, why, you know, in Hebrew they say, lama lagdil rosh? Why go the extra mile? Stay where you are. This is the Mitzrayim that they fought then, and this is the Mitzrayim that we're fighting now. Mitzrayim, again, is not a country. Mitzrayim comes from the word limitation, meitzar. Anything that limits me, I'm in Mitzrayim. And we're all slaves in our generation. One person is a slave to his car. All day long he washes his car. And one person is a slave to his business. All day long he's in the business to make another dollar. And one person is a slave to the phone. People I see all day long with their phones. They're thinking like, you know, if Shalach Shov, you would think. Every second you check your email, like, you become a slave to a little box. And you become slaves to almost anything. This world, you know, the power of impurity in this world is so strong that it sucks you into it. So you become a slave. Some people become slaves to a TV series. They can't miss it. Oy vavoy, if I miss the next one, what's going to happen? So we become slaves to almost every little thing, and we allow us to fall into this klipa, to this power of impurity. So the story of Mitzrayim, even though it happened 3,300 years ago, we're still living in the same story. Same thing with the story with Haman and Purim. Even though it happened 2,000 years ago, we still, every generation, have a Haman, this klipa that comes to oppose Kedusha, that wants to kill us spiritually and physically. There's in every generation a Mordechai, a tzaddik of the generation, that he's the ultimate bitul. This is the le'umat zeh. It says, zeh le'umat zeh bara Elokim. Hashem created everything equal. So there's always something that opposes the Kedusha. So the ultimate point of Mitzrayim is not that we left the slavery and now we can eat matzahs. And this is just the, when I said before it was celebrating the edut, the testimony, yes, we left Mitzrayim, fine. But really what we're trying to tap into is to the power that happened on that day. Now, it all starts on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. That's when Hashem told Moshe, tell the Jews to get themselves a sheep. Start preparing for the Korban Pesach. Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We see, Bechlal, that in the book of Bereshit, we only got a few mitzvot. The first mitzvah we got is Purvo, to be fruitful and multiply. Then we have the mitzvah of Gid Anasha, when Yaakov was fighting with the angel. We got the mitzvah of circumcision. We got very few mitzvot in the book of Bereshit. And in Shemot, we also got very few mitzvot. Most of the mitzvot are starting now in the book of Vayikra. But the first two mitzvot that we got in the book of Shmot, which was right before they were ready to leave Mitzrayim, was the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, sanctifying the month, and the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And these two mitzvahs are the basic and the foundation of our belief. These are two mitzvot that they arouse the power of Emunah. So on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that's when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, now you're going to command them to start sanctifying the month. And he told them to start gathering sheep, which you have to understand at that time, that was the idols of the Mitzrim, of the Egyptians. And then on Yud in Nisan, then that's when they took the sheep and actually tied it to the bed. And for 4 days, all the Egyptians came and were like, what's going on? Why are you tying this animal, our God, to a bed? So they said, we're going to slaughter it in 4 days. And there was a huge miracle that they were like, what do you mean you're going to slaughter our God? Anyways, the whole story of Shabbat HaGadol, we don't want to sidetrack to that. But the point was that it was a big miracle that the Egyptians actually didn't kill them. The miracle occurred only because they had the power of Emunah, that's a commandment from Hashem. And what we can learn from that we do a lot of the mitzvot that we do in this world, we don't really do it because we really internalize and believe that it's a commandment from the Master of the Universe, and we do it with love to our Master. We might do it because of our neighbors are looking at me, and I don't want to be the one who's like, what, you're not doing it? Well, how they call it in English? Peer pressure?
Peer pressure?
Some of the mitzvot that we do or don't do is because I'm afraid that in the physical world something's going to happen to me. And some of people do, they do all sorts of mitzvot because they're afraid of a reaction in the world to come. But very few people operate because they really believe that, wait, this is a commandment from the Master of the Universe. And when I actually do that, I arouse the power of what's called Emunah. Because most people in our generation, they're struggling with Emunah, with faith in God. They believe, but they don't really believe. Or when something bad happens, it shakes them off right away. Breaks their takes them away from their balance. So the miracle was that they did it in such Emunah that this is the commandment from God. So they were saved and the Egyptians didn't actually kill them. Then on the 14th day of Nisan is when they actually slaughtered it. This is the morning of Pesach. Yudalet Nisan is when we burn the chametz. And on the 15th day of Nisan they actually ate it. Now it only happened that way the first year. Then they had the Mishkan. They didn't do it exactly the same way. And then on the 16th day of Nisan, they left early in the morning. Netzach Hama, they all left Mitzrayim. Now we have to understand that what happened that day, it was a chain reaction of slowly, slowly Hashem coming down into this world. And we know there are many different levels of what's called Gilui Elokut, a godly revelation. Very few times in our history we had a very powerful Gilui Elokut. Gilui Elokut means a godly revelation. The main one was in Matan Torah, that we actually saw with our eyes God coming down on the mountain. Then we had the Holy Temple, so they used to see the fire coming down, they saw the Shekhinah. We had times in our history that they saw godly revelation. Of course, Adam and Chava, they saw Hashem. But to get to such a high godly revelation, it's once in a blue moon. The thing is that we do get these godly revelations pretty often, just that because the world is covered with this klipa, with this negative energy, we actually don't see it. But our soul sees it. The most common time is Shabbat. Every Shabbat there's a very strong godly revelation in the world, we just don't see it. But we know that many tzaddikim in history, they would actually see that Shabbat is coming in, they would say the color of the sky is different, something's different. Some people are very sensitive, they see it. Excuse me? A lot of people are very sensitive and they feel that the energy is changing right away. And amazingly, that even doctors will agree that the pulse on Shabbat is different. Second that Shabbat comes in, the ketzev, the pulse of the heart changes. So if you tap into the Shabbat, you actually see that the entire energy of the world completely changes. Why? Because the whole world gets elevated. That's what the Arizal says. That's what's called the worlds go to a higher level. Aliyat HaOlamot. So there are auspicious times that we do get this godly revelation. So the most common one is on Shabbat. And if you really prepare yourself the right way, you can tap into it, you actually feel it. And you can go into this zone that you feel that you're in a totally different time. And this is type of a godly revelation that our soul sees it. Maybe our body doesn't, but if you have a very good connection between your body and your soul, you actually will feel it. The problem is that why we don't feel it is because our body is covered with klipot, this negative energy that surrounds our neshama, our soul. And the more bad things that I do, the more klipot I bring on myself. Because every act that I do, I create a klipa. So if I lie today 10 times, 10 klipot. I said Lashon Hara today 10 times, another 10 klipot. I do all sorts of things. I can create klipot with my mind. I steal, I take, I cheat. I don't have to kill somebody, but there's so many little things that I do that I create these klipot, these negative energy. Klipa is like a peel, like a shell. I have a bad thought about another Jew. I judge somebody not the right way. Every little thing. I have anger, all these things, they create a lot of these klipot. So my body is so surrounded with the klipot, I'm not going to be sensitive to feel anything. If a person really refines themselves to a level that, first of all, they don't do any sins. The sins is what bring all these klipot. Because a positive mitzvah, I generate godly light. This is a positive mitzvah. I bring down godly light into the world. I'm like a generator of light. That's why to do tshuva for missing a positive mitzvah is very, very hard. Because doing tshuva for a negative mitzvah, okay, I did some type of a blemish. I made a mess on the table. Now I just wiped it off with my tshuva. And it's not there anymore. It's very simple to do tshuva for a negative commandment. But to do tshuva for a positive commandment, it's almost impossible because I had the opportunity to bring light into the world and I didn't. That's it. It's a moment that just passed. To understand it in our terminology, it's like calling in the morning to your boss and telling him, today I'm not coming to work. So he tells you, no problem. Take a day off. But I'm not paying you for today. So yes, you got a day off, but you're not getting paid for that day. Now in the physical world, okay, big deal, so one day I didn't get paid. But in the spiritual world, if I came here for 60 years, for 70 years, for 80 years, the Arizal explains that we have five levels in our neshama. The highest level of the neshama is called Yechidah. Comes from the word in Hebrew, Yichud, not Yachid. People think Yechidah means that it's something separate. Rather, it comes from the word Yichud, the ultimate connection. This is what's called a Chelek Eloka, a piece of Hashem. Then another level of our soul is called Chaya. Chaya is like this Or Makif. People call it Aura. This is what's called in the Lashon of Kabbalah, Tzelem. Tzelem is like a godly figure that is around our body, and our shape comes from the Tzelem. Then we have Neshama, Ruach, and Nefesh. These are the low levels of the Neshama, and they're in their body. But the level of Chaya, the Tzelem, is built from thousands of pieces, Nitzotzot Kedusha, these sparks. And every day of my life corresponds to one of these pieces. So if a person lives in this world for 80 years, do 80 years times 365 days of the year, this is how many sparks are in his Tzelem. And if a person lives 60 years, do the calculation, that's how many sparks are in his Tzelem. And if a person, Chas v'Shalom, leaves this world when he's 20, means that in his Tzelem there are much less sparks to elevate. Means that he has much less to do, a much smaller job to do. So every day I have the opportunity to do what I need to do in this world, to take one of the sparks and elevate it. That's why sleeping is a very important thing. Because when I sleep, so many things happen when I sleep. If I would know what happens when I sleep, I would be mad when I wake up. First of all, you know, when we sleep, our neshama needs to get charged. We see that at the end of the day, physically we get tired. Spiritually, our neshama gets tired. It needs to get charged. We're not going to get into what happens when we fall asleep, but one of the main things that happens is that I take the spark that I refined that day and I take it up to its source. That's another one of the reasons why we say Kriyat Shema Lamita. Because in order for me to take up the spark, I have to do tshuva. How am I going to do it when I'm dirty with all sorts of bad things I did the whole day? Now if I missed my opportunity that day, it's one day that I missed my job. Okay, I have the opportunity the next day to do tshuva and take maybe with me two sparks. But the point is that every day of my life, I have a whole list of things I need to do. And what I missed, it's a moment that disappeared. Now go get it back. So it's very hard to do tshuva for a mitzvah taseh, because I had the opportunity to do something, but I lost it. So I don't even know how we got to that. But the point is... The point is that I was saying with the mitzvot to say, it's much harder to do tshuva for mitzvot to say because it's an opportunity that was missed. B'met, I don't know how I got to that, but going back to why... Baruch Hashem.
It's a chain reaction of Hashem coming into this world.
No, I was talking about that there's different levels of godly revelations. Then I said that on Shabbat, we have one type of godly revelation. I said that we're not sensitive to see these revelations because our body is full of klipot. And we have to refine and get rid of these klipot. Now, if a person really lives his life according to the Torah and is very particular with every little thing, and the amount of negative actions he's doing per day are so little, then there's barely any klipot, and there's a very close connection between the neshama and the body. Now, if that person, bechlal, takes it to another level, and he sanctifies himself in what's permitted, what's called in Hebrew, lekadesh et atzmecha b'mutar lecha, then you elevate yourself to even a higher level. So slowly, slowly, you start removing these layers, these klipot. So slowly, slowly, I start seeing things. Things are much more clear. Things, niklat barosh, I understand. I read something, I understand it. I see things, they make sense. And then I start becoming more sensitive to spirituality. We see, unfortunately, in our generation and in many generations before, the people who are very far away from Hashem. Why is that? Because their body is so covered with klipot that you approach now a person now on the street and you tell that person, you want to come in, there's a good Torah class. Who cares? You tell a person on the street, you want to put tefillin on? Zavati, leave me alone. What's tefillin? What are you talking about? You invite somebody to a Shabbat table, Shabbat? There's a party! The mind is completely not focused on the right point. The klipah is so surrounding the neshama that there's no sensitivity to kedusha, to holiness. The more you start removing these klipot, then the person starts actually wanting to do it. You start loving it. So the more the body is covered with klipot, it's more to say the neshama is covered with klipot, it's harder for me to relate to godly revelations, to see things. I want to have a greater godly revelation. I have to start removing them. Yeah, klipa is a negative energy.
You have good people that aren't from our religions, and you're saying that the reason why they're not connecting to godliness, to holiness, or to kedusha is because they're full of people. But people is negative. And there are nashim shem nashim not tovim, shem osim arbe dvarim tovim.
And the thing is that doing good things can be interpreted as maybe two or three mitzvot, avat Israel. Or gmilut chasadim, charity. So you can say, okay, they do a lot here. The problem is like this, and I don't want to sidetrack too much, but it's important to know. The Zohar explains that between our soul to God, there's a rope that connects our neshama to God. This rope is built from 620 fibers. The same way that a physical rope is built from many thin strings, the spiritual rope is built from many thin fibers, and to be exact, from 620 fibers, corresponding to 613 mitzvot that we have in the Torah, plus 7 of the mitzvot of the sages. The Zohar calls it Tarach Amudei Or. Tarach means 620, Amudei Or, pillars of light. If a person is serving Hashem, what's called Beshlemut, in completion, there are 620 channels that connect him to the master of the universe. Now start cutting these ropes. So you start losing power. So you cut 50 of them, okay, still have 550. And you cut more and more and more, the connection starts becoming weaker and weaker. The easiest way to explain it, if you remember 20 years ago when we had the internet, the connection was called dial-up. Remember that? We used to connect it to the phone, and we would hear that squeaking noise, and then it would take about 5 minutes to send an email. I remember I would send an email, then you sit like this, you're waiting for the email to go, Why? Because the connection was not even a real connection. It would ride on a telephone line. Now we have broadband. 3G, 4G. Now you stream a video in a second. It's an email. It's not even a, if your email takes you more than a second to send, you get upset. If a page on the internet takes more than 2 seconds to open, you leave the website. So why is that? Because now the connection is broadband. Pas rachav, what they call it here in Israel. Same thing. If I have a very little connection to God, then it will take me 5 minutes to send an email. I'm not going to feel anything. But if I have a high-speed internet, all these channels are wide and open, then my connection to God is clear. Now, it's the same thing with arteries. I can have a connection. I can have what's called a channel, but it can be completely clogged. Same way like we have in our body. You have arteries, they can be clogged. So if I open up all these channels, then my connection to the master of the universe, the source of life, is very clear. And if I start cutting these connections, then the connection is not so clear. So a person can be a very good person and do, like you're saying, a lot of good deeds. But he has 20% connection. 80%, he's not doing anything, then there's no clear connection. So the person can do a lot of good things, but we don't know the weight or the importance of each channel. Could be that, you know, the channel of, I'm just giving you an example, of keeping meat and dairy is one of the most important ones. And, you know, helping another Jew, it's a small channel. I'm just giving an example because we don't know. Nobody can come and say that mitzvah is the most important and this mitzvah, nah. The reason why I was saying everything that I was saying, then I'll answer you, and then I really don't want to sidetrack too much. The reason why I was saying that is to understand how I can tap into a godly revelation. Now, I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not accusing anybody. That's not the point. The point is, I'm trying to make a point. How can I get to see a godly revelation? What will stop me from getting a godly revelation is the klipot that I have. It doesn't matter if it's my fault, it's not my fault, I was born into a religious family. That's not the point. I'm not now analyzing each individual. I want to get to a point to that we understand what happens on Pesach. In order to understand about this gilui lukut, this godly revelation, first I have to understand how come I don't get this, how come I don't see it. So of course what you're saying is 100% right, but later on, if you want, we'll psychoanalyze every individual. There's a reason, Bemet. There is a reason. It's called Hashgacha Pratit. And if a person was born to a certain family, there's a reason that person needs to elevate these particular sparks. Bechlal, it says that before the Neshama comes down to this world, most of us, if not all of us, are all reincarnated. We're not here for the first time. A lot of us come here as a reincarnation. People think that we come here because we were punished. The Arizal explains that we have to do all 613 mitzvot in thought, speech, and action. That's why we have to come back here constantly. We only know one person who did the entire 613 in one shot. And that's David HaMelech. He did all 613 mitzvot in thought, speech, and action in one shot. There's no reincarnations of David HaMelech. But all of us come down here because we have to fulfill a certain quota of mitzvot. On the way, maybe we messed things up in a previous life and we have the opportunity to letaken, to fix it. The point is that before the Neshama comes down to the world, they tell her, where do you want to be born? So if the Neshama says, I have to fix the sin of stealing, please put me in a family that has a lot of money that I'm not going to have such a te'ava to steal. And if I have to fix the sin of arayot, of forbidden relations, so put me in a frum family from the day that I get born. I'm going to be separated. No, there's always going to be a mechitza, whatever. The neshama sometimes chooses where it wants to go. And yeah, each neshama comes, the script, exactly what it needs to elevate. One person needs to elevate these sparks, so they're born in this particular place. And another person will born here. Each one is a completely different thing. This is completely off our subject. I mainly want to touch the point why we don't see godly revelation on Shabbat. I want to understand why there's a tzaddik that on Shabbat he's in a completely different world, and I want to be in a different world, and I have all these yetzer hara on Yom Shabbat that I don't even enjoy the day. So the point is that we want to learn how I can tap into this godly revelation, and the main thing that stops me from not receiving a gilui elokut is only klipot. Now, it doesn't matter, you can be the best person in the world, but we also don't know the severity of the action. Because for me to put tefillin, you know, it's every day I put tefillin. And for another Jew, on the other side of the planet, for him it's the biggest yetzer hara. The weight of my tefillin and his tefillin is completely different. Because I did it because it was easy for me. And him, to get to put tefillin, he had to fight his yetzer hara 2 hours every day. The weight of the mitzvah is totally, totally different. One woman is the easiest thing for her to be dressed modest, and another woman, it's the hardest thing for her to she feels every inch of the sleeve is like a big deal. The weight is completely different. I'm not judging anyone, and I'm not trying to analyze every person why. The point is what I'm trying to make, so we can move on, is why I'm not getting this godly revelation. And before we continue, what did you want to say?
I